Welcome, everybody. It's the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst, AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com and Pro Football Focus fantasy football contributor. I'm joined by my co-host, Brian.
Good evening, Andrea.
Good evening, Brian. It is week three already in the National Football League in the 2014 season.
Time is flying.
A lot of stuff to talk about from week two. Of course, the rash of injuries from week one continued on into week two. The rash of horrible things happening in the National Football League involving team reactions, player reactions, league reactions, and behavior of certain players continues on.
Kind of hard to even remember there's a football season.
It's kind of hard to even remember there are games being played right now, except for the fact that we're making our baffling minute picks yet again later on in the episode. Also later on, we have a guest. We have Baron Batch. He's an artist. He's the founder of Studio AM in Pittsburgh. He's a salsa entrepreneur, and he's a former Pittsburgh Steelers running back. So we're going to talk about his art, his life after football, how football kind of has, had an effect on the way that he does his entrepreneurship, his hustling, his working, so, and what he's doing for the city of Pittsburgh.
Very cool stuff.
Very cool stuff, actually. It's a great story. Nice chat with Baron Batch. So look forward to that later on in the episode. First, we're going to talk a little bit about the injuries around the league. This probably doesn't even cover all of them, but Ryan Matthews, Eric Berry, AJ Green, Jamal Charles, no Sean Moreno, DeSean Jackson, Gerald McCoy, Charles Tillman, Mercedes Lewis, Alan Hearns, Tavon Austin, Eric Decker, Walter Thurman, John Beeson, and of course, Robert Griffin III.
Wait, before we go, are all those, like, you're mentioning them because they're significant injuries?
They're notable injuries. These are injuries that, for example, no Sean Moreno, just like Tyler Eifert did in week one, has a dislocated elbow. Charles Tillman is done for the season. He has torn his tricep. Gerald McCoy has a broken hand.
They're all going to miss.
DeSean Jackson has
significant time if
they're DeSean
not
Jackson has an AC sprain.
I'm just saying, like, they're
these are all significant.
They're going to be out for a while, or they're out for the year, basically.
Right. These are significant injuries, of course, capped off by Washington quarterback Robert Griffin III, who dislocated his ankle scrambling before a pass play. Washington went on to win behind Kirk Cousins by a large margin, putting up 41 points over Jacksonville. It's a brutal injury. It's also just not good for a guy like RG3, who obviously had the knee injury in college, had the knee injury again, and was not the same last season. Obviously, with a new offensive coordinator in Jay Gruden, that would kind of prefer a pocket-style passer like Kirk Cousins to run that system. A lot of injuries, a lot of questions about RG3, and this is obviously a setback in his ability to remain the starter in Washington, regain that job whenever he might be back, the timetable of which is as of yet unknown.
I mean, Cousins came in and played well, and I think that, most of the time that we've seen Cousins play since they've both been there.
Last season was kind of meh.
Yeah, I guess as teams were able to prepare for him, things like that, he was maybe a little less effective. But still, he's not a terrible quarterback, potentially this could work out for them in for the season, as far as maybe if it's true that Jay Gruden, wants that kind of guy, and then maybe.
Well, he doesn't. I'm not saying there's any report that he wants that kind of guy. I'm just saying his system.
His system warrants that kind of guy more so than.
Yes.
Well, just because guys like RG3 are not found very often. So, this is, besides just being an awful thing to watch, I'm sure for the Washington fans, maybe the old ones, they flash back to seeing Theismann go down with his knee like years ago, just because there was that kind of thing. It was graphic, and they couldn't stop zooming in on his ankle.
We saw just ankle dislocation after ankle dislocation.
Yeah,
let's just zoom in on it, folks.
It's such a terrible thing to watch, and then they just couldn't stop showing us. And then And obviously he's going to be out for a significant period of time. This is Kirk Cousins' chance to, you know, prove that he's got what it takes. And you know,
yet again,
I'm not sold that we're going to see RG3 starting in Washington ever again. And if that's the case, I know they have lots of money owed to him, things like that. Potentially they can have somebody trade for him. I don't know who would want to trade for a guy like this because he's been hurt so much now, and I don't know that all of his injuries are what I would say is a result of the way he plays. I know a lot of people have said that.
Yeah, I would disagree, but...
Well, I mean, like, some of the stuff's happened, like, this was, like, in the open field with nobody around, or he was kind of hurling over a guy, but it wasn't, like, a contact injury.
No, but he was running.
He was running,
It was a non-contact ankle dislocation while on the run.
I've seen plays where he's taken off of the ball and invited the contact. Like, he wanted to turn himself into, like, this punishing running back.
We saw it in the preseason. RG3,
right.
What are you doing?
I'm saying that, like, he didn't get hurt that bad on those kind of plays. He just, you could see him, like, taking some punishment, and you're like, ooh, that's not good. But, like, on the bigger plays, the one where he blew his knee out in the playoff game, there was nobody around on that either. That was a non-contact.
Right, but he was already playing on a partially torn ligament.
Fair enough. I'm just saying that I think some of it's been a little dumb luck. But I think some of it is certainly that just the way his style, the way he plays, it's not as he loses some ability to stay healthy.
Right, and of course, if you're a running quarterback who's getting hits like that, you're going to your ability to stay healthy.
There's plenty of running quarterbacks that stay healthy and they take off, go to the sideline, and if someone's coming, they get out of bounds. And you know, there's some of that he could certainly learn, but I don't know that he ever will. I mean, it's just his natural style to play that he plays, play the way that he plays, and I don't know. I'll be curious to see where he goes from here, just because I don't know that there's much left there can be much left in Washington.
I just worry about any coaching staff, whether in Washington or elsewhere, you know, trusting him enough to sink some significant cash into
right.
him. So that's going to be the question going forward. We'll see, you know, once there eventually becomes a timetable for RG3's rehab and recovery, we'll see if perhaps he can get back on the field this season and reclaim that starting job. Because if he doesn't this season, I kind of question where he lands on any depth chart in 2015. Moving on, the drug policy debate obviously continues on. They did come to an agreement, the Players Association and the NFL, about PEDs involving HGH testing and no longer including the amphetamine situation with the PEDs. So guys like Wes Welker will be able to play this week. However, the substances of abuse policy, the one that affects Cleveland Browns wide receiver Josh Gordon, has yet to be finalized. However, he did plead guilty to his DUI or DWI, sorry, that he was charged with over the 4th of July weekend, because if he gets that done, which he did before they agree to the new DUI charges or DUI penalties, which is a minimum of 2 games mandatory for your first DUI. So he gets to avoid that. So it doesn't look like he's going to have any additional suspension ahead of him, and it looks like when all is said and done, he'll miss 10 games, obviously with time served including, so he's expected to be back around November 23rd if everything we've been hearing about the substance abuse policy negotiations is to be believed, and that's what ends up being passed whenever it gets passed. But again, that's coming up. I mean, if they've passed the PED policy, obviously the substance abuse policy changes are forthcoming.
So it's good news for him, I guess. That
it's good news for him. It's good news for
the
Browns.
That, you know, maybe the fantasy owners that took a gamble and rolled the dice and picked him up on a flyer or whatever, or traded for him. So, I think obviously there's still a little bit up in the air here, but
sure.
It, it's it's a step in the right direction.
One of the most positive things about it is, from what I'm hearing, is that Gordon will be allowed at the team facilities to work out and train and all of that. He just, you know, can't be in practices and
right.
on the field. So that's going to be good, because that gives him a place to go, something to center himself on.
That he's got to stay away from the team.
He doesn't have to stay away from the team, which was initially part of the 1 year minimum indefinite suspension he was given initially. So that's also a good sign. He can, you know, be around the facilities and kind of have that centering focus,
just be a part
centering
of the team
element
not,
in his
not,
life.
Not be playing. So
right.
Yeah. No. It's definitely. Definitely good news for him, and I think a step in the right direction. Although, it's not agreed to
it's
yet.
It's not agreed to yet.
The new rule supposedly that's going around is that they're going to go from extremely restrictive in
the marijuana
minimum to just slightly less extremely.
Right, it's going to 35
nanograms.
Yeah, up from 15. So it's still below the FAA thresholds for pilots and below WADA, which is the World Anti-Doping Agency.
Significantly below
And also
WADA.
Below Olympic levels. But, again, it's something. It's an improvement. I mean, it's not the ideal improvement. Eventually the NFL will have to get there, but at this point, it's something. Because also the NFL has some other problems on their hands right now. Obviously, we spoke at length last week about Ray Rice, how the NFL handled, his situation mishandled how the NFL and the Ravens organization mishandled Ray Rice and dealing with the punishment from his domestic abuse situation with his then fiance Janae Palmer. The situation got even worse. For the NFL last Friday, Adrian Peterson, obviously the star running back for the Minnesota Vikings, was charged with child abuse after admitting to, as well, beating his 4-year-old son with a switch in Texas, citing that's the way that he was raised, which, of course, I don't really want to get into it. I think that it just goes like that's okay. So your parents hit you with a switch. So you hit your kid. That's not how that works. Also, it's pretty well documented that corporal punishment, whether it be spanking or slapping or hitting somebody with a stick, hitting your kid with a stick, none of that actually helps correct behavior and actually makes a child's life much more complicated and difficult than it should ever be, and has a negative effect in the long term. It was also uncovered that there was another investigation in June, I believe, of 2013, about a laceration on another one of his son's forehead, allegedly caused by Peterson, but there was no investigation into it. So the Minnesota Vikings deactivated Peterson for Sunday's game, all the while supporting him, saying that they believed that what happened was an act of child discipline, not child abuse. They had to backtrack, of course, when the other allegations emerged. They first reactivated him. Now that he is on a super special commissioner exempt. So he is away from the team with pay. This is something that the team announced, by the way, at nearly 1 o'clock a.m. Wednesday morning Central Time. Double secret probation. Greg Hardy, the Carolina Panthers defender, he was found guilty of domestic violence charges, but those are on appeal. He voluntarily went on commissioner exempt. He will be away from the team, ostensibly both of them away from their teams until, quote, legal issues are resolved. Then it came out today, being Wednesday, that Arizona Cardinals running back Jonathan Dwyer was arrested for aggravated assault after striking a 27-year-old woman and an 18-month-old toddler earlier in the summer. So he has been deactivated. He was deactivated immediately by the Arizona Cardinals. So it looks like we've got a problem on our hands with players committing these acts of violence, the way teams are handling it, this whole process involving Adrian Peterson and Greg Hardy on the exempt list and all of this, the whole time Goodell has been silent. We've heard nothing from Commissioner Goodell on these matters. It's just kind of crazy. It's week 3 in the NFL, and And we're talking, we continue to talk about these horrible issues that plague our society, that plague the NFL, and it's just, it's so disappointing and so unfortunate.
Yeah, as you and I were discussing before
it's
the
disgusting.
Show tonight, the likelihood that we see more and more of these over the coming months, I think it's probably pretty high that the more of these are going to come out. You know, it's that maybe things that were buried in the past are going to be unearthed now. And
certainly
I think
what Gloria Allred tried to do about the 2007 Brandon Marshall case today, I don't even know what her motivation there was. That was crazy.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is that, you know, there's going to be more women that were afraid to come out that we may hear from at this point, or at least there's, like I said, a high likelihood of that, I think. But that's to be expected, I think, and I think it's kind of has to go there before maybe there is some real change in that, these things probably were buried in the past or the people were too afraid to report. And just considering all the spotlight that's on it
right
now,
I mean, yeah, I mean, we're having,
see more.
I mean, we're having important national discussion right now about child abuse, about domestic violence, and about corporate culture and accountability and corruptibility and messages to the media and all of these things, you know, being fueled, of course, by the National Football League. In one sense, that's remarkable. You know, on the other hand, it's disappointing that these aren't issues that are in our collective consciousness and problems that we want to address and are appalled by on a daily, regular basis. But it is interesting to see the National Football League creating this many, you know, these issues, you know, creating a discussion. And that's, I think, the only positive takeaway from this. I think the other positive takeaway is that a lot of people are a lot more critical right now of football players, their roles in society, their roles as role models or whatever. And on the business side of football and how, you know, the Minnesota Vikings didn't really, you know, they reactivated Adrian Peterson and then only acted to put him on this exempt list because Radisson Hotels pulled out as one of the Vikings' main sponsors. You know, Nike refused to sell Adrian Peterson jerseys in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. Now they've suspended their contract, Nike has, with Adrian Peterson. Anheuser-Busch, a major sponsor of the National Football League, came out, issuing a statement about how disappointed they are with these events and especially how the NFL has handled them. And now that the money is being threatened.
Right. That's exactly what we said last week, too, is that
there's nothing significantly auspicious is going to happen until money starts being threatened. And
no
now,
real change will happen until money changes, you know. Once,
right, and
once
money is on the verge of changing, and I think mm-hmm. that's why Roger Goodell has been so silent right now, too.
Yeah, he's
because he's trying to protect his money.
He's got to figure out how to step appropriately, and which is in the best interest of himself as well as the league and the owners. But yeah, it's trickier and trickier for them right now. The things just don't look good, and every couple days there's a new one coming out making things look even worse. And then now that we hear this week that sponsors are starting to get a little itchy, that's really when we could see something happen.
Yeah,
so I don't even know what that would be right
what
now.
Matters is what matters is the financial bottom line, and what matters is wins and losses. I mean, that's why the Vikings reinstated Peterson after the 1 week, is that they lost and they want to win, and he's their, you know, their best player on offense. But that's not the way you should look at it. You know, but that's the constant double
Probably.
Standard that you
I mean,
see
I'm
in the.
I'm not on the Vikings team.
But that's a constant.
It certainly seems that way.
Double standard that you see in the NFL all the time, anyway. Where, you know, if it's not an important or starting player on your team, you're going to be cut as soon as this allegation comes out. But if you're Adrian Peterson, you know, we're going to be sympathetic. We need all the facts. We believe this was not child abuse, even though it clearly appears to be so.
Yeah, that was really their biggest misstep.
God!
I honestly, the fact that they deactivated him after the news broke and he was indicted and was turning himself in and all that, I thought that was a good move on their part. You know, to not sit there and say, "Hey, we want you in the lineup as soon as we can." You know,
but then they
turn around
the next day
on Monday. You know,
right.
Like which there was no reason to say that on Monday. I mean, there if even if you thought that, you know, give yourself another day or two just to let some more shake out, and so you can really thoughtfully act and you know, really figure out what you want to do or how you're going to approach the situation.
Right.
Instead, it was just like, yeah, we want to reinstate him now. And then, like, 2 days later, it's, oh, but, you know, now he's going to go on this exempt list. And it's just, they look like they've been flailing, you know, scrambling to figure out how to deal with the situation.
Yep. So I'm sure that a lot more will unfold. Hopefully we'll hear something from Commissioner Goodell. I'm not holding my breath for it to be truthful or revealing in any manner. But hopefully teams that experience this situation have just received a masterclass on poor public relations in the face of one of your players doing something atrocious. Mm-hmm. And hopefully all the other clubs have learned from the Ravens, from the Vikings, and from the Panthers the wrong ways to handle this. And not just because of a PR standpoint, but because of a right and wrong, a basic right and wrong kind of standpoint.
Yeah.
So on that note, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with a more positive story. We are going to be talking with artist, founder of Studio AM in Pittsburgh, former Steelers running back and salsa maker, man of jack of all trades, real Renaissance man, if you will, Baron Batch.
Yes.
We're going to talk about his studio, of course, in Pittsburgh, what got him into the full-time art game, what kind of projects he's been up to, and the work he's been doing to better the city of Pittsburgh.
All right.
So we'll be back right after the break here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast with Baron Batch. So stay tuned.
My name is Mud. Not to be confused with the jacket-beaded dentist. My name is Mud. It's always Baron.
Our guest this week here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast is an artist. He's a founder of Studio AM in Pittsburgh. He is also a salsa magnet and also a former Pittsburgh Steelers running back. It's Baron Batch. Thanks for joining us here this week, Baron.
Welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, your transition into full-time, being a full-time artist, you know, it's for some guys, you know, NFL players tearing their ACLs and they don't really have anything to really fall back on. Football becomes their kind of their sole identity. For you, you know, the injury, the ending of your career in Pittsburgh with the Steelers was the opening of the door for you to pursue your other dream, which is art.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, for me, when I tore my ACL my rookie year, obviously it's always a bummer when you can get injured, but I was kind of determined to make something out of it and get something out of it. So I actually started painting after I tore my ACL, and that's the best thing that's ever happened to me. So once I got released, it was really easy just to just keep doing what I've been doing to do it full time.
And you've evolved your painting style to something called Pop X, Pop Art and Expressionism. You know, how did you, you know, land on that kind of style of painting, of making art?
Well, I think it was definitely a process for me. You know, I'm a self-taught artist, so, you know, for the first few years when I was working, it was really just experimenting, trying to find my own, you know, vibe and style. And then, you know, something I kind of stumbled on, and I think for any artist that does it full-time, they kind of have their bread and butter, and when they find a style that kind of comes easy to them, you know, I'd say that's the one that most artists stick with, because it's their art and it's identifiable to them. So
right.
For me, that was Pop X, and it's been good sense just kind of rolling with it.
So a lot of this kind of, to me, you know, kind of got the ball rolling with the whole salsa thing, the Angry Man salsa thing, and then a lot of the painting that you were doing back in Texas, a lot of kind of Texas-influenced landscape stuff. You know, what kind of drove you to, you know, you know, you're doing the art, you're doing paintings, and then you were also, you know, kind of branching out with this salsa entrepreneur stuff, which, by the way, it's delicious.
Fantastic
stuff. Yes. We bought a jar. It's
thanks,
really
thank
good.
Thank you. That means a lot. I think, you know, for me, I, I've never been the person to, you know, kind of sit inside a box and say, this is what I am. This is all I can do. So, you know, salsa is kind of just a continuation of, like, that mentality and just taking something that I was interested in and being like, if I'm doing this, why not just, you know, make it worth my time? That's how I approach a lot of things. I want to make my time worth it. So I think all entrepreneurs kind of think that way. Is, you know, I want, you know, my time to mean something. So for me, you know, I was already making the salsa. I knew it was good. I knew that's a good product. So when I was playing, it was really easy to kind of start branding and getting ready. And that was definitely something that I kind of strategically used my NFL platform to get off the ground. Mm-hmm. And it's rolling now, so it's going well.
Yeah, definitely. I've seen a lot of your former teammates spending a lot of time on Twitter asking you about salsa over the past couple of years. So I can see why, you know, the demand all of a sudden. It's
yeah,
really good salsa,
yeah.
though. So it's like,
thank
it's
you.
Not just, oh, you know, football player salsa. No, it's delicious.
It's super tasty.
See, I love that. It's so funny that you said that because, like, you know, that's been the issue, I feel like, you know, the whole time. People understand how hard it is to, like, separate yourself from the NFL once you play it.
Oh, yeah.
With the way people just, like glorify it and just, like, they... Like for me, it's been a challenge just separating myself from it and being taken seriously as a businessman, as an artist, as an entrepreneur in other fields. So it's a funny thing that, you know, a lot of times most people would assume that like, oh, this guy, you know, he got out, he put his face on product, and it's probably okay. But truth be told, it's like I was in there like juicing limes, like preparing the recipe, like getting it down, and. And, you know, it's completely, you know, kind of like my brainchild. So that's been, you know, a whole different route that I've went with starting businesses as far as, like, coming out with a following and being an NFL player. I've just been very involved, and a lot of guys aren't.
Right. And you know, and you seem to just have a very hands-on approach with everything because everything just seemed to evolve so quickly. You know, spending a lot of time, you know, back in Texas in your home state, and now you're kind of shifted your focus on almost a full-time basis with Pittsburgh and Studio AM. Tell us how the whole Studio AM project, which is, you know, your creative agency, basically, and collaborative art space, how did that come mm-hmm. about?
Well, it's kind of been just a big evolution of hustle, really. Like, when I started out, you know, it was me and John Malecki, who's a former teammate, mm-hmm. and then we owned the company together. But we both got released, and we just kind of sat down and decided. And it's kind of funny because not many, you know, times in life do you get the chance to, like, really, like, fully turn a page, like, and start over and recreate yourself as something different, you know, like, that doesn't happen very often. You know, that happened when I decided, like, when both of us decided, okay, we're done with football. Who are we? What are we? What do we want to do? So we sat down and kind of, like, figured that out and went for it and you know, started John was building at the time. You know, I was doing art full time and kind of just helping each other out where we could because I'm, you know, I also, I'm very hands-on and like to build and stuff like that. So he's building out of my garage, and at the time, my studio was on the third floor of my house, and it got to the point where we were like, let's just get a space, let's do this, you know, we
right.
can do it, like, we work hard, like, this is what people do when they start businesses, is they do this, they just go for it, and I told him, I was like, man, honestly, it's like, we gotta approach this like we're running for freedom, like, we wanna run to be self-employed, like, we wanna run to be entrepreneurs, and that's how we approached it. Like, it was, like, our run for, like, what we wanted to do and what we said we wanted to be. So having him there has definitely just helped a lot. And mm-hmm. it's always a lot easier when you have someone else there sold out for, you know, the same vision.
I mean, you guys with Studio AM, you're kind of doing everything. It's like you kind of want to get everybody in Pittsburgh involved
in expanding
the arts in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we collaborate with so many companies and do so much stuff. I think, you know, my goal with Studio AM is to make an impact on Pittsburgh and change Pittsburgh. There's a few reasons why. One is because I feel like Pittsburgh is just such like a prime city for change, and it's such mm-hmm. like a city on the brink. You know, it has everything it needs, and it's just gotta just get past that one last little. Like that push of culture to really like just like no, this is what we are. This is like to be a cultural hub in the region, you know. So, you know, we've been involved with the symphony here doing events with other companies, doing street art all the time, doing pop-up shows, and just really what I've realized is people really want art, but it's just not very accessible. So for me, you know, the way I view it is I'm not an artist to get filthy rich. I'm an artist to make art, and I'm an artist to have my art seen. And when I approach art like that, I started making money, go figure, because I was actually producing art and producing it at a high level. So for me, it's been crazy to see just over the last, like, a few months how Pittsburgh's embraced the studio and embraced what we're doing, and just all these companies are just reaching out and really, like, taking us in as, like, you know, like a Pittsburgh company. Because one thing about Pittsburgh is once Pittsburgh falls in love with something, like, they never fall out of love with it. So it's been really cool to just be plugged in with the community.
Yeah, you've done a lot of interesting things. You had Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto in to do some painting. You recently were working with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra at their gala. You're going to be doing some dinner series. I mean, you've got a lot of different types of projects coming out of Studio AM.
Yeah, I always wondered, like, why companies never just did cool stuff. I was like, what is up with companies just, like, having, like a presence, having a platform, and they don't do anything with it? It always kind of bugged me. I was like, there's all this red tape. And I was like, man, if I was ever the red tape, I'd just do awesome things. So that was kind of my mentality to it, is when I realized that, like, a lot of times I was, like, the red tape of just saying, you know, yes or no. And if someone brought something really cool to the table, maybe it wasn't super profitable, maybe it might leave us a little bit of money, but it's just awesome to do, I say yes. You know, so that's the difference between me and a lot of companies, is, like, we've gotten known just because I'm totally okay with maybe taking a little loss for the sake of, like, doing something creative, or maybe not making much of a profit, or just a pure collaboration with no money involved. And, you know, it's been great. And because of that, we've gotten exposure and been able to, like, really generate a clientele now that's growing, and we're doing very well.
You know, it's hitting a lot of different demographics, too. I mean, you guys have been working on those cornhole boards, but then you're with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra, and yet then you're with the mayor, and then you're doing dinner series, and then you're painting people's shoes, and then you're, you know, leaving art in public spaces. And it's, you know, it is a very interesting way to try to get that Pittsburgh community, you know, all involved, because there's something that can draw anybody's eye.
Yeah, I think for me, I've always just loved to work. I was like the football player. I just loved to practice. Like, I really enjoyed it. I loved the process. I love the process. And for me, with art, it's the same thing. I just apply everything that I loved about football and just put it into something else that really is, I feel like, in a way, is way more competitive than football, because, you know, you can never know it all. You can never get good enough. There's never a level where you're, like, all pro as an artist. You just got to keep getting better, you know? And for me, that's kind of my mentality, is just get better, do, you know, more memorable things, like, put your name out there more. Just, like, I'm competitive at it. And I want to, and I go to sleep at night just thinking, like, there's no way another artist got work from today. Like, that's my mentality when I go to sleep, you know, at night, you know, every night. It's like, no one got work from me today. And that was the same way when I played. It's just, I've applied it to something else, you know. So for me, like, yeah, we put art everywhere. I try to paint on everything just because why not? You know, I feel like for most artists, they take a lot of things that are below them to paint on. But for me, the way I see it is, like, you only know you're valuable as an artist if you can paint on anything.
Well, and you know, it's like, you know, the whole up early, up late thing. You know, it's not just a slogan for Studio AM. I mean, that's basically how you're living this process.
That literally is how we do it. That's how it got built. That's how, you know, everything happened. Both John and I, we just had to bust our asses, you know, and just, like, pour a lot of, like, time and energy into this project to get it up. And now that it's up and running, my favorite thing is when someone's like, hey, can you get lunch? Just let me know if you have time. And it's like, of course I have time. I have all of mine. It's all of my time. Like, I own every second of my time. It's the best feeling ever. And that's, it makes it where, yeah, I'm cool with, like, getting a couple hours of sleep because I can choose to do that. I'm not forced to.
Right. So what are the projects in the pipeline for you and for Studio AM coming up here in the fall and into the winter?
Well, for the fall, we're doing a lot of stuff with Symphony. I'll be doing cleaning, actually, with the entire Symphony. George Dukai is hosting the Sci-Fi Spectacular coming up.
Oh, cool.
I'll be moving the 13th through the 16th. On the 25th of this month, we're having a big studio party and have some musicians coming through. They're playing and performing. And then that weekend, Sean and I have to, Sean the curator, we have to go to Detroit, for a benefit. So we'll be in Detroit for a little bit, and then I have to get back. And I don't know, there's always something. There's always something going on. As a creative freelancer, it's like, you got to keep it that way. I work coming in, but at the same time, like, I'd never just, like, not schedule stuff during the week. That's crazy. That's just, like, choosing just not to work. And, you know, I think a lot of entrepreneurs, like, struggle with that. A lot of creatives that I bring in, they're kind of, like, freelancing, and I bring in on projects. They struggle with that, just realizing, like, you have to make work for yourself. Even if you might not be getting paid, you have to make work for yourself just so you have content, especially in 2014. I mean, you know this. Like, you have to have content. That's why we're doing this podcast.
Right.
I mean, you got to have something that keeps you relevant, and a lot of people don't get that, and they want projects to come, they want money to come, but they don't want to create a resume that people can see in a body of work.
Right. Well, before we let you go, Baron, let all of our listeners know where they can find you on the internet, Studio AM, anything, you know, you want to let our listeners
on
know.
On the internet. you can go to studio-am.com and go to my art website, which is PopX, or just like Google my name, Baron Dash, and I think that my website will pop up.
So, and then also, people in Pittsburgh, you do a lot of, you know, open collaboration, open studio events, and people can also come in by appointment too, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And the way we kind of set that up is a lot of the stuff we run and kind of do and put on, it's probably by social media mainly. So we don't have a phone in the studio. We have no need for one, so we just
right.
set up appointments like through Twitter. Just DM the studio, we essentially call everybody back and message, and we start appointments that way. The way I see it is, someone's too lazy to get on Twitter or get on social media to schedule an appointment. I probably don't want to Google. So it kind of weeds people out. It's a different way of doing it, but it's worked very well up to this point.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Baron Batch, for joining us this week. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I've been following all the stuff that you've been doing with Studio AM and the salsa, and it's really great work. It's really great for Pittsburgh,
it's really
awesome to see what you're doing. And
gosh,
it's,
I really appreciate it.
Great. All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Baron, and we'll talk again soon.
Oh, thanks so much. Bye.
All right. Have a good night. Here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, and it's almost time for minute picks.
All right.
Where we're going to pick each game of the week. It's within a minute.
I'm purposely not keeping track of my record this year.
No, I'm only keeping track of mine because I do for work, but I'm not doing so well, but I'll get there. Mainly because this has been an unpredictable first 2 weeks of the season. Just a couple of games of note from week two, for example. Cleveland Browns, last second 26-24 victory over the New Orleans Saints. Very solid performance all around, aside from the way that they defended Jimmy Graham.
That was a great win, especially the fact that the way they won it, and they came, you know, they came back and won at the end, and it was real dramatic, and just the whole thing was a great. It's a great football game to watch, and it was especially great for the Cleveland Brown organization and fans.
Another surprising outcome, the San Diego Chargers making the Seattle Seahawks look mortal. Chargers win 30-21. You know, before that game, Philip Rivers said he was not going to be afraid to throw Richard Sherman's way, and he absolutely was not. Keenan Allen, you know, had Sherman beat on a few routes there. And they kind of just never said quit. They had a few creative defensive formations to kind of keep Russell Wilson in check, and San Diego pulled off something that I think nobody thought really realistically anyone outside of the NFC West division could pull off this year and beat the Seahawks.
Yeah, this was like the stereotypical oversteer for everybody, like watching Seattle that first week, and they look so dominant and so good over the Packers, who should be a good team, and it was just like everybody said, oh, there's no way these guys are going to lose to anybody. It's good, you know. It was going to take a real tough argument for to get someone to say that they're going to lose, and sure enough, you know, the Chargers showed us why we like the NFL every year, because it's
you can get really, some really thrilling, unpredictable
it's really
games.
Tough to predict. Yeah.
Another thrilling, unpredictable game was Sunday night. Chicago Bears went to San Francisco in the home opener at Levi's Stadium and beat the 49ers 28-20. Basically, a complete offensive and defensive collapse for the 49ers in the second half. You know, even with Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey kind of dinged up and a questionable defense, the Bears pulled it off.
I never saw it coming. I never saw it coming all the way until it happened, basically. Even the first half of that game, they looked abysmal.
Yeah.
I mean, like, they had no business being on the field, and they were going to get blown out of the game or something like that. And somehow they put that together in the second half. And I mean, credit one to their offense stepping up, but credit enough to their defense for you know, because that defense has been a rough story for the past year and a half, or since Trestman's been there at least, and the fact that they were able to stiffen up in the second half there and really shut down what is a tough to deal with San Francisco offense. I think that was definitely a nice performance by them.
All right, let's move on now to our week 3 minute picks. We're gonna pick each game, and y'all can
agree,
burn them or
agree
whatever
or not.
We're starting with the Thursday night game. Tampa Bay Buccaneers are at the Atlanta Falcons. We got another big divisional matchup there. I'm going with the Atlanta Falcons. Obviously, they didn't look too sharp against the Cincinnati Bengals, but the Bengals are a formidable team. On their home field in Atlanta, I think that's going to help them out a lot. Tampa Bay is still a work in progress, so I'm going Falcons.
Yeah, I think Tampa has shown us the first couple of weeks that they're not quite ready,
and of course not. I mean, they've got new coordinator, new head coach.
They started
new quarterback.
Started two home games. The first two games were at home. One was against the Panthers without Cam, and the second was with the Rams with their third string quarterback. They can't win either of these games. Now they're going to go on the road and take on the Falcons in the dome. Falcons coming off a big loss. I don't see this one going well for the Bucs.
All right, heading on to Sunday at the early game, San Diego Chargers are at the Buffalo Bills. Buffalo 2-0 to start the season right now, looking much sharper on offense and quite sharp on defense. San Diego, of course, with that impressive win last week against the Seattle Seahawks. I like San Diego here. Obviously, traveling east in an early game is going to be a little bit difficult. But I think that Buffalo will have their first loss of the year with the Chargers coming to town.
Buffalo is one of the early surprises of the season through 2 weeks,
sure,
obviously. And
I think that happened with them a couple of years ago, too.
Yeah, but this is, you know, obviously with the big question for that team going into the season was, is EJ Manuel ready to lead this team to do anything good? They had a lot of pieces in place on defense. They brought in Sammy Watkins and have a few other. They got some decent running backs there. They had a solid squad, but the question was EJ. And through the first couple of weeks, he's looked pretty decent, and the team's done pretty well. Chargers, yeah, they're obviously solid coming off a huge win. I'm going to take the home team here, though.
Next up, Dallas Cowboys at the St. Louis Rams. You know, Tony Romo had a pretty strong performance. Nice win for Dallas over the Titans last week. DeMarco Murray was the one to have the crushing turnover at one point, but Dallas still won. St. Louis, you know, they're still reeling. They don't, you know, they're down their top defensive end. They're down their quarterback, obviously, and their backup quarterback. You know, Dallas can shoot itself in the foot, especially when they're on the road. But I think that they'll put enough together to win this one.
Yeah, I really was down on St. Louis last week, going to Tampa, just because, you know, they had gone through so much in the first couple of weeks and preseason and whatnot, and you know, they just looked like a team that was kind of in a mess. Of course, so did the Cowboys.
Sure.
And sure enough, both of them go on the road and win last week. And so this game, I think the Cowboys figuring out their offensive power is probably going to prevail in the end here.
Next up, Washington at Philadelphia. Kirk Cousins obviously going to be under center for Washington. You know, Philadelphia just squeaked out a win against the Indianapolis Colts on Monday night. You know, I think that we're obviously seeing an expected regression out of Nick Foles, because his numbers from last year certainly were not sustainable. You know, I'm going to go with the home team with Philadelphia here. I would feel a lot stronger about Philadelphia winning this game if it was a healthy RG3 versus Kirk Cousins, because of the game planning that goes along with it. They have had a week to get ready for Cousins, however. And Washington doesn't have a very good defense, and Philadelphia, obviously, we know about their offense. So I'm going Eagles.
Yeah, I think this should be a fun game to watch. I mean, I'm interested to see how good this Redskins defense is. Washington defense is, and you know, they haven't played the greatest of offenses yet, and now they're going to go to Philly to play that offense, which we've also seen has its time that where it can sputter, if you
yes.
will, in both the first two games. But once it gets going, it's really tough to deal with. And yeah, they're the more complete team here in my mind.
Next up, we have the Houston Texans at the New York Giants. You know, neither of these teams are given or throwing a lot of confidence in my direction. Giants lost last week to Arizona 25-14. Houston, they defeated the Oakland Raiders, but the Oakland Raiders look again like they're having a struggling season. I'm going to actually go with Houston coming in and beating the Giants, only because I just have a vision of one of those bad Eli Manning games in my mind. But to me, this is kind of a toss-up. I could see why Giants would be preferred just because they're the home team, but I'm going to go with Houston.
Yeah, I mean, the Giants the Giants are a team that I expect could turn things around at any given time. I mean, they've been that kind of team. They've established that.
Sure.
Houston, certainly, their offense doesn't do much to jump off the page at you.
Unless you're throwing touchdown passes to J.J. Watt.
But that's exactly what I was going to say, is they got that guy who, you know, maybe they're going to insert him at quarterback this week. But I think as long as they have him, he's the best player on either of those teams, and he's maybe enough to turn the tide there and give Houston another road victory.
Minnesota Vikings at the New Orleans Saints. Hey, Minnesota gets to play in a dome. I'm sure they miss theirs. obviously, a hectic and dramatic week for the Vikings. But beyond that, I mean, not having Adrian Peterson out there for whatever reason is not good for Matt Castle, as we saw last week. It's not going to be good this week. New Orleans defense, I see them bouncing back being at home. I see that offense bouncing back. Obviously, they're 0-2 right now. For a Super Bowl favorite, that's a pretty big hole to dig themselves out of. They're gonna have to fight. So, and I think they will. I'm going with New Orleans.
You know, I was looking at this coming week's schedule last week during the late games, and this is one that stood out to me right off the bat as one I feel for Minnesota going into this one. I think this is going to be a big Saints win. They're really in a desperate situation. 0-2, backs against the wall, first home game, and yeah, this is going to be Saints.
Also, please excuse Quincy if you heard him. He's a talkative cat who likes to make noises at the wrong times. Next up, Tennessee Titans at the Cincinnati Bengals. Cincinnati were darn impressive last week in their defeat of the Atlanta Falcons. I expect the same this week with a team like Tennessee coming to town. Cincinnati, you know, last week they had a dominant performance on offense and defense. A.J. Green missed most of the game. He might miss this week. Obviously no Marvin Jones or Tyler Eifert, and they got it done. I expect more of the same with Tennessee coming to town. I'm going Bengals.
Yeah, the Bengals really should take care of business here. There's not really they I think the Falcons are a lot stronger team than the Titans.
And, I concur.
And the Falcons came in and Cincinnati really
stifled them.
Yeah, they really shut them down. That is a much more explosive offense than this Titan team. I really think the only way Titans have a chance is if Cincinnati is just not really paying attention. And that's not really something I expect.
That's not really what
right
I expect
now.
When Hugh Jackson's your offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and Marvin Lewis is just a pretty good coach at this point. So yeah. It's hard to argue with the Bengals here.
Next up, also AFC North here. We got Baltimore Ravens at the Cleveland Browns. Obviously, we talked about Cleveland's victory. Baltimore had a decisive win in Baltimore over the struggling Pittsburgh Steelers last Thursday. I'm going with the Cleveland Browns. I think they've got some really nice momentum going. That loss against the Steelers wasn't a backbreaker by any means. It was kind of a sign of progress, even in a loss. For them to be 1-1 right now, everybody looked at that first three games of the schedule and went, I'm going with the Browns here. I just have a feeling about that defense. As long as they can quiet Steve Smith, they're good.
Yeah, the Browns obviously with a great story last week. It's a big momentum builder for them. The opening or home opener win, first time or second time
since 99
since they're back. Yeah, and so a lot to build from them. The Ravens obviously coming off a big win, but we saw the first week that facing a pretty good defense. But both weeks, arguably facing pretty good defenses, and they played a little bit better last week. But yeah, I think I like the Browns here at home, building on that momentum. It's another home game for them, a big divisional rival, and I like especially since halftime of that Steeler game. I just like the way this team's playing. For now.
Green Bay Packers at the Detroit Lions. I really like, obviously, the home field advantage in Detroit. It can get really loud in that dome, especially when you're talking about a divisional opponent like Green Bay. But the one thing I really look at here is Aaron Rodgers, the Green Bay passing offense versus that depleted Detroit secondary. To me, that's going to be the key in this game and why I think that the road team, the Packers, emerge with the win.
Yeah, it's going to take Jim Caldwell a while if he's able to do it, but to get the Lions out of the Lions. And what I mean by that is the Lions have their Lions moments.
Yeah.
And they really know how to trip over themselves like few teams do, and you can point to that just in any given week. Whether if it's a loss, certainly, but this game, we know the story. Aaron Rodgers coming into Ford Field, and but I'm going to go with the Lions here. I'm going to say that they somehow pull it together for this victory, and I hope I'm not just being optimistic.
Another divisional matchup, Indianapolis Colts at the Jacksonville Jaguars. I have some reservations about Indy this year. I still think that they're obviously favorites to win that AFC South division. But I'm not seeing Andrew Luck play his best football right now. I think he's having a few chemistry issues with his receivers, plus, again, another questionable offensive line, again, plus another questionable run game, again, plus another questionable defense. And all of these things, I think, have piled up to make him play a little bit under his talent level. That being said, unless Jacksonville, which they could, they're the home team, they could really catch the Colts by off guard. But I'm going with the Colts just because I can't give up on Luck to Wayne just yet.
I had lots of good feelings for Jacksonville coming into the season.
I still do.
They looked great in the first half against Philly, and since then it's been kind of
they have some work to do, but
it's been rough. And they really couldn't do anything on the ground or do much for pass protection last week. The Colts, I think they could win just about any week, but I also think they have some deficiencies. And as far as this game goes, Jacksonville, I'm going to pick them. Why not? I like them in their home opener because I really like Gus Bradley and what's going on there. And
yeah.
I think this is the week that they can finally put it together.
All right. Jacksonville.
I'm going to go out on a limb.
All right. Next up, I'm not going out on a limb here. The Oakland Raiders are traveling to New England to take on the Patriots at noon. I'm sorry, but I'm going with the Patriots. I'll tell you this much. James Jones, he's got a lot of talent. He at least helps out Derek Carr there. The run game is still kind of an issue. Maurice Jones-Drew's got a hand right now. The defense, I'm going with the Patriots. I don't even really need to justify this pick too much, and I apologize to any Raider fans out there.
No, I think you're right. I mean, it's nothing to apologize about unless you're on the Raiders team, because it's from what we've seen from the Raiders thus far, and it's been, you know, not a great showing. And you know, the Patriots kind of got back on track last week, and now they're going home for their first home game. This one's just—it's really tough to pick the Raiders here. So, I won't be doing that on this one.
This week we go back to that more traditional format. There are only three games in the 3 o'clock Eastern hour: one at 3:05, two at 3:25. That starts with,
four.
4 o'clock. We're, 4 o'clock. We're 3 o'clock here in the Central.
Yeah, all times on the football podcast are in Central.
We'll start with San Francisco 49ers at Arizona. You know, the 49ers, they're an up and down team. I was really surprised to see exactly how kind of unraveled they got last week against the Bears. And it's going to be really hard for them to go to Arizona, this team that's kind of on an upswing. Drew Stanton subbed in last week for Carson Palmer and they won. So I'm going to go with Arizona for this week.
I don't know. This is kind of a tough one to pick. It's because it's in Arizona. I think Arizona's a solid team. They have a pretty decent defense. Their offense, you know, there's pieces there. Drew Stanton's still playing, right? This week is
I believe
Palmer
so.
Still
I think I think Palmer is still.
Yeah, I like the 49ers coming off a loss. I think that
even on the road against
even on the
Arizona,
road, it's on the road against Arizona with Drew Stanton, and I think that defense is going to bounce back and find a way to shut Stanton and that Cardinal offense down.
All right, next up, we've got a Super Bowl rematch.
Uh-oh.
That's right, the Denver Broncos are at the Seattle Seahawks. The Seahawks went down to San Diego and lost a game that they didn't think they were probably going to lose. Denver hasn't lost a game yet, but they're going to Seattle, where it's hard to get a win, even if you are the Denver Broncos. I think that loss last week is going to be even bigger fuel for the fire for the Seahawks. I'm going Seattle. It's going to be fun.
Yeah,
I don't expect a beatdown like in the Super Bowl, but I'm expecting a fun game.
This one's, you know, I guess it's going to be interesting just to see, you know, what Peyton's doing up in that stadium against that team again. You know, he's got a chance to right all the demons that came out in the Super
Bowl. He's definitely in the middle of an exorcist season. He's definitely he's definitely furious.
But
he's harnessing and using his demons.
I would feel more comfortable picking the Broncos here if Seattle didn't lose last week. But them coming off a loss, going home to play that team to rematch that game. Agreed. I don't know that they're going to smoke them like they did in the Super Bowl, but I like the Seahawks there.
Next up, Kansas City Chiefs are at the Miami Dolphins. I'm going with the Dolphins here. I'm kind of disappointed. Alex Smith, of course, he's regressing towards his mean. The defense depleted, lots of injuries. Jamal Charles, questionable. You know, not likely, I would say, to play this week. I like Miami. I like their pressure that they can bring to quarterbacks who are like Alex Smith. See Andy Dalton over the last two of his last three seasons and so on. So I'm gonna go with the Dolphins.
I think
Tannehill's gonna look good in this game too.
All right. I don't forget that the Chiefs played really well last week. in a tough matchup on the road against Denver. And I thought that was a strong performance of them, even in a loss.
Sure.
You know? Coming off with that, because they looked
I'll
abysmal.
I'll give them that. Sure.
They looked a lot better last week, I think, even though they lost. That said, going on the road to Miami, Miami's coming off a tough loss themselves. I think it's in this situation. I'm just going to go with the home team. Miami's basically, you know, they feel like the type of team that's probably going to win some games that you don't think they will, and they're going to lose some games that you wouldn't think that they would too.
Right. Sunday night football, Pittsburgh Steelers travel to Carolina to take on the Panthers. Pittsburgh Steelers, of course, have scored 9 points in their last six quarters of football. To say they struggled against the Baltimore Ravens last week or in the second half against the Cleveland Browns in week one would be an understatement. Meanwhile, Carolina and that offense we were so concerned about and Cam Newton and his rib have outperformed expectations. The defense, of course, still playing at a high level. The Steelers don't do well in night games on the road in the national spotlight. I'm going with the Panthers.
Yeah, the Panthers look tough.
Oh, they look tough, don't they?
I don't know. I think this is an interesting matchup. Just the teams that you're watching and the styles they play and the players they have. I'm real curious to see how it shakes out. I'm not feeling real confident going either way. You have certainly some stats showing that Steelers probably aren't a safe bet by any stretch.
Right.
I think this Carolina defense is probably just playing a little too well right now. They could probably marginalize that Steeler offense and get it done at home.
Finally, last but not least, we have the Chicago Bears traveling to take on the New York Jets on Monday Night Football. The New York Jets, to me, they look like a team that can catch anybody at any time. I'm not saying they're a trap team and that they're otherwise garbage, but they can dial up some good defense, some good offense on occasions and take a team by surprise. I don't necessarily see that happening on Monday night, though. I like the Bears here. I am curious to see, you know, what this Bears defense looks like, or if they go into this week a little bit overconfident considering what happened in San Francisco. But on a Monday night football game, I see why the Jets would be appealing, but I'm going with Chicago.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Jets are probably a solid team. They played pretty well last week until Green Bay got their head on straight. They gave them some fits for a while. I think this one really going to come down to which Bears team we're going to see, because they're kind of Jekyll and Hyding with us. You know, they had flashes at home against Buffalo, and they didn't flash until the end of the game this past Sunday. I guess I'll say that they're going to take that momentum from last week's win and carry it into next week, and they'll take the Bears.
All right, those are our week 3 minute picks here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. They're probably garbage, but you can do with them what you want.
I think you should print them and blow your nose with them.
Yes, you could do that. Make a paper airplane and entertain your friends.
Make a paper airplane, and then when they're all going wrong, then you can just light it on fire.
Yes, something like that. You know, whatever you need to do, really. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back to wrap up this thing. So stay tuned. It's not much longer here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. The F-Ball NFL Podcast, back in time to say goodbye.
Aww.
But before we do that, of course, I got to read from my stupid little book of football facts. Again, if anything seems wrong in here, let us know, because I'm pretty sure that there are a lot of problems, and that's why this book was practically free.
Right. All right, let's get factual.
Quarterback Warren Moon of the Edmonton Eskimos was named the most outstanding player in the Canadian Football League for the 1983 season.
The United, forgot about that, didn't you?
The United States Football League began playing games in 1983. The league suspended operations after the 1985 season.
Well, that lasts a little longer than the XFL, I think.
I think so. The most valuable player of the NFL Pro Bowl in 1985 was defensive end Mark Gastineau of the New York Giants. This one I know is a false fact. It's actually Mark Gastineau of the New York Jets.
Oh.
This is one they got wrong. There's a freebie for you listeners, but yes.
You're supposed to see if anybody noticed that.
It doesn't matter. I know this. I've tweeted out this one before, now that I've read it. Running back Bo Jackson of Auburn was the number one draft pick of the NFL in 1986. Jackson was selected by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
He must have got traded immediately. I don't remember him playing for the Bucs.
This book.
We'll have to check that one, I guess.
And finally, in 1987, a 24-day pro football player strike shortened the NFL season by one game. Replacement players were used by teams in place of veteran players.
And thus, Keanu Reeves.
Yes, I guess that's what happened. So those are our may or may not be true, except for the Gastineau one that we know is not true because he did not play for the Giants. Football facts of the week, courtesy of the Big Little Book of Football Facts.
Yes.
And upon reading of the facts, that means that this week's F-Ball NFL podcast is now over. Big thank you again to Baron Batch for joining us this week, talking about his art and what he's doing for the city of Pittsburgh. Really appreciate it. I'm sure we'll have him back again in the future because he's constantly working, so there's going to be constantly new projects to discuss.
Yeah, right. He's going to have like 20 more businesses next time we talk to him.
Yeah, right. Seriously, everybody, buy his salsa. It's unlike any salsa you've ever had.
If you don't like it too, if you don't like spicy, then be careful. But if you're into something spicy, it's real spicy, but it's really tasty at the same time. It's not just burned.
Right.
It's got a burn to it, but
it's got a lot of flavor.
It's a lot of flavor.
It's
yeah,
a good
it's
salsa.
Really good stuff.
So again, thanks.
He didn't pay us anything to say that.
No.
It was just, we had the salsa and it was really good.
And I paid for that salsa. So again, thanks to Baron Batch. And of course, thanks to all of you for listening. I'm the host here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm Andrea Hengst. I'm AFC North lead writer for BleacherReport.com. You can find my work at BleacherReport.com or through the Bleacher Report team stream app. I'm also a pro football focused fantasy football contributor. I'm writing deep league gems, your waiver wire ads for y'all in deeper leagues that comes out the beginning part of every week. So sign up for Pro Football Focus Fantasy Gold and you can read all about that. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's also my 5 p.m. spot Eastern time at ESPN 970 Ashtabula in Ohio when there isn't Cleveland baseball preempting me. So that's every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern. So be sure to listen to me there. And you can find me on Twitter at FBall_Andrea, FBALL_Andrea.
And more compact, you can find me at BFAT65 on Twitter. That's at BFAT65. And I occasionally pop in and say stuff.
Sure. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for joining us here this week at the F-Ball NFL podcast. Enjoy the week 3 action that kicks off on Thursday night, and we'll be back next Wednesday evening to talk about all that week 3 action, make our week 4 picks, and everything else that happens, talk about everything else that happens around the league.
Everything else.
So until then, have a wonderful week.
Yeah.
Peace.
Later.